Welcome to the Alan Film Scoop.
It's week 75 of the Alan Film Scoop.
I'm Anne McElhenney.
I'm Phelan McAleer, of course, yes.
It's week 75, yes, Phelan. How long is that then?
1 year, 5¾ months since the 2 week for the flatten the curve lockdown. That's when the government told us we're going to take 2 weeks, close everything down, flatten the curve. Remember that, when the idea was that we would, not overwhelm the health services.
The hospitals.
The government lied, and that was not what it was about. It was to get you softened up for a lockdown.
Do you remember, Phelan, how good we were? We were really well behaved for those 2 weeks. Yes. I remember us incredibly well behaved.
In fact, maybe 4 weeks, 5 weeks.
Yeah, I remember we bought, we had plastic gloves and everything. We did all kinds of stuff.
Did we? Yeah.
Yes, I bought a whole lot. We still have them. They're very useful, by the way, if you are making meatballs and you're mixing all your ingredients together. Nothing goes to waste in this house. Yes. And by the way, that's kind of interesting because that actually segues into the recipe later on about things not going to waste. Okay, yeah. We have a quiz question.
No, what's on the show today, Anne?
We have a quiz question.
Mm-hmm.
What is historic about Kamala's trip to Asia? We investigate, so you don't have to. And by the way, we've also discovered that there's no there. There's no there on January the 6th. More right. On that later.
Yes. And we look at another reason the left love lockdowns, because it allows them to be the moral police. You know, their nights out are just better and different from our trashy entertainment.
Yes.
And the LA Times lies through its teeth to push for hundreds of thousands of Afghans to be brought into America without proper procedures.
And breast cancer hoaxer in chief, Josh Fox, is a hypocrite and snob, but you knew that, right?
I remember you actually addressing the breast cancer issue with Josh Fox in a civil and mannerly way.
That was one of
those. What else is on, Anne? What else is on the show?
Moving right along. And liberals just can't help lying, especially when they want to portray the rest of us as greedy liars.
Yeah, and when you hear this brilliant analysis of the evils of the Me Too movement from a really leading conservative, it's just a great analysis.
And we have a very, very first from Scaredy Cat, the little angel. Yeah, we got some footage of Scaredy Cat being a little angel.
Oh, yeah, angel.
Not really.
And loving angels instead.
Brilliant recipe. Really simple recipe for leftover cheese from the French, of course, called fromage fort. Fromage fort. Actually, really, really great recipe. I love that. I hate waste, and I hate the idea of wasted cheese. Actually, we have a very funny story about wasted cheese. We went to a wedding of a niece of ours in Ireland a few years ago. Very posh wedding. Very, very posh wedding. She had the most magnificent cheese board I have ever seen in my life. We're talking about, we're talking about 30 pounds of cheese. I have never seen so much cheese.
Of cheese.
And I remember looking at it at the beginning of the wedding, and I was thinking, we're like on our seventh course of the food at that point. And I'm looking at it thinking, there's no way that cheese is going to get consumed. Even if it was an Irish wedding, which does go on until about 7 o'clock in the morning, involves people drinking 24 pints of beer. Believe it or not.
Well, this was an Irish, Irish-Nigerian wedding.
Yeah, and we're more civilised, basically.
Let me tell you, the Nigerians were
very, very classy.
Very civilised.
Very civilised.
It wasn't much 7 a.m.
No.
Drinking.
So then, at the end, so I'm watching, I'm kind of going, having a great time dancing and everything. But I'm keeping my eye on that cheese board, by the way. And as I said, I don't even know if it's a cheese board when there's that much cheese on it. Amazing, magnificent cheese board. And at one point I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to ask the girl who's getting married, because I'm that kind of auntie. And I did. I said to her, what's going to happen to the cheese? Because there's no way the cheese is going to get consumed. And I just hate that idea, because the hotel would have thrown it out, by the way. The hotel would have totally thrown it out.
Oh, yeah. So elf and safety, innit?
She said, and she's very sensible, down-to-earth person, and she was like, do you want to take the cheese? I'm like, I'm totally taking the cheese. And I did take the cheese.
But Anne, you should have waited till people actually had a chance to eat it before you took it off.
No, that's not true. He's lying now. I asked the hotel to put it in their fridge for the night, and I would collect it in the morning, and I did collect it
before
in the morning.
Before or after?
That's not funny, Phil. I did not do that. He's being really naughty now. I waited till the bitter end, until the last drinker had left the room, which was me, until I asked him to collect the cheese. But it's a true story. And then I distributed a lot of that cheese, and we ate a lot of cheese that summer.
That's a very long teaser.
Sorry. So in our very first story, we asked you at the very beginning of the show, we have a quiz, very important quiz.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, because we've been noticing over the weekend, we noticed a lot of news outlets talked about the historic trip of Kamala Harris.
Let's put up some headlines.
Historic trip of Kamala Harris to Asia. Historic. Historic.
Vice President
historic.
Kamala Harris.
A historic first. And we're like, Now, what could be historic?
Well, I saw those headlines. I couldn't work out what the historic, but because I know Obama went to Vietnam and apologized to them. So what was she going to do? Go and apologize again?
Prostrate herself, maybe?
Yes, because he was the first president to go to Vietnam.
Sorry, can I just do a quick boom, boom? Prostrate herself because she's never done that before. So that wouldn't be a historic first then. Okay, moving away from the smut, just to say...
No, that was me. Magda, I just want to say, Magda's saying, don't slam your glass down. Magda, I was slamming my glass down.
In disgust at my wife. Okay.
Lowering the tone.
You can always depend on me to lower the tone. But can I just say, because we don't want you to have to go to all the trouble of investigating what was historic and what is historic about Kamala's little sojourn to Southeast Asia... is that she's the first vice president to ever go to Vietnam.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I knew that would inspire you. So that must inspire children all over the world.
That's right.
And oh, listen, it makes you really want to read or write poetry or something. Yeah, God be with the days.
Yeah.
So the other incredible story to depress and upset you is, and not surprise anybody listening to this show at all, not even once. Mm-hmm. There's no there for the January the 6th. And this is exclusive, by the way. You know, the FBI have found, according to Reuters, by the way, this is Reuters, evidence, the FBI have found scant evidence that the US Capitol attack was coordinated.
Yes.
Well, blow me down with a feather. Can I just say something here, Phelan? I have a question for you. So basically, and here's from the Reuters story, from just a few days ago. The FBI has found scant evidence that the January 6th attack on the US Capitol was a result of an organized plot to overthrow the president or whatever, the presidential election results and whatever. And that, no, it wasn't coordinated by far right groups or prominent supporters or the then president, Donald Trump.
It was not a very scary riot.
So there was no grand scheme with Roger Stone and Alex Jones and all of these people storm the Capitol and take hostages, right? Here's my question to you, Phelan, and there's no good answer to this, by the way. I mean, I know the answer in a way to my own question. So the FBI, the CIA and the combined intelligence forces, which up until now, I was making this point with you a few days ago, Phelan. Like, you know the way when we were growing up, you'd watch these movies and there'd be like these special agents and the FBI and the CIA. And I honestly, when you're watching those movies, I remember thinking, oh God, the CIA ever, you know what I mean? CIA, okay, cool, you know, the intelligence officers, these guys. So the whole collection of these intelligence officers thought that there was a plot to overthrow the election and they were wrong. So there's two things here. Are they incompetent or are they corrupt? No answer is good, by the way.
They're both. I mean, I think the text messages of Strzok and Page showed they were both incompetent and corrupt. I mean, they're humorless too, by the way.
Yes.
Which is, you know, which adds into everything. Those text messages showed that we had people who got everything wrong. And who lied through their teeth and actually created fraudulent documents to allow themselves to investigate the Trump campaign. But even in their political analysis and their analysis of people, all this, they got it wrong. So they're both incompetent and corrupt.
And you know what's incredible about that January 6th? I mean, what's extraordinary is that 25,000 troops sat in parking garages in Washington, D.C. for weeks because apparently there was about to be a coup, right?
That's right.
25,000.
There's going to be hundreds of thousands marching on the...
Don't need to point out to anybody listening to this the fact that in Afghanistan, how many troops are there now? 6,000, is it?
Yeah.
And this is 6,000 after Biden was forced to do something to try to protect Americans who are still caught in towns and villages around Afghanistan who have not escaped. And by the way, also $100 billion worth of US equipment that is sitting all over the place in Afghanistan that wasn't picked up. I mean, you know what struck me the other day, Phelan? I mean, it was like, so you have a private company like Amazon, right? And I'm not saying anything good or bad about Amazon, except for actually, in fairness to it now, I did learn how to use Amazon during the pandemic.
Yes.
And I found it extraordinary. Because I would see something, I would say to you something like, oh God, we've got mosquitoes, or whatever it was, right? We need that mosquito spray. And in the time it would have taken me to nearly get in the car and go somewhere and try and find mosquito spray. And do you remember the old days when you drive from shop to shop to look for something? You go online, the thing arrives either that day or the next morning. So Amazon, right, run by Jeff Bezos, who I, you know, maybe he's very bright, but is he a complete genius? He's able to do that all over the world. And the combined intelligence forces and the combined military might of the United States, you know, all these combined forces mm-hmm. have a situation now where $100 billion of taxpayer money is going to be left behind in Afghanistan for the Taliban to use to kill us, right? Am I missing something there, Philip?
No.
I mean, it's really awful. And the idea, by the way, that there are Americans and friends of the Americans.
But they can send on the ground. They can send heavily armed soldiers and police to some guy who went in and put his feet on Nancy Pelosi's desk.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, have you seen them breaking into people? I mean, these are unarmed
overkill.
People.
Overkill.
I mean, you know, and, you know, they do also, they switch off your Wi-Fi. Before they do it, so that you don't get any film of it, any ring doorbells or anything like that. And, you know, 20 armed people smash in for a middle-aged guy who literally put his feet on Nancy Pelosi's desk.
And dressed up like he was going to a Halloween party.
Yeah, you know, these are the kinds of people, but they're now, it has to suit. And this is the biggest investigation in the FBI's history, you know?
Oh really? January 6th? Well,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. While they were busy at that, isn't that amazing? I mean, you know, while they were busy at that, meanwhile, the Taliban are cutting the hands off people.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Taliban are working out that girls in Afghanistan are never going to leave the house again.
Yeah, well, so there you go. That's our elites for you. Talking of our elites, The Guardian had a great story. They've always hated tourism, mass tourism, except their kind of nice tourism that their elites go on, but mass tourism. So they did an article about basically tourism's been wiped out, the end of tourism because of the lockdowns, not the pandemic, the lockdowns. And from Bolivia's Lake Titicaca to wildlife tourism in Nepal, we find out how the crisis has affected people in four travel hotspots and whether or not they want the tourists to return. And the headline sort of says the same. Do they want the... And it's like, you think,
that headline would let you think that, okay, when we get into this story, we're going to find all these people who actually didn't like the tourists in the first place.
Well, or him, ha, you know, good points, bad points. Hmm. So they go to these four places, right? Africa, it's sponsored by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation too.
The story is.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's
and
hilarious.
You get there and not one of them ever says anything
negative about the tourists.
Not, I mean, and some of it is beautiful. Like one guy set up a guest house in his village with the express wish of bringing people from other countries. This is an old fellow who was just a farmer to see his culture and how he
fantastic.
Lived. And made this, you know, and, you know, they interview somebody from Nepal. And, you know, he's now living, I think, in Dubai because the industry collapsed.
Yeah, he had to go to Dubai because the job he had collapsed. He couldn't get paid.
Yeah.
And he actually paid a lot of money to some guy to try and get him a job. And the job he got was in Dubai, where he doesn't want to be.
No.
He wants to
I'm
be
missing
home.
My country and my profession, but I don't have any options because of COVID. I was jobless, you know.
Poor fella.
And you know, and then you get people in Africa at national parks, and of course the money is all disappeared. They're out of work, but also the conservation money's gone. I mean, and then you have people in remote villages who have established lifelong friendships with people. I mean, your parents were the same people. You have a lifelong friend because Americans came and stayed in your guest mother's guest house.
That's right.
And they made you become a pen pal with their grandchild or something like that.
Yes.
And now you've got a lifelong friend. That's what it is. And of course, there's examples of that. Now it's much easier to keep in touch with people. So the Guardian's headline is completely misleading because that's what they want. That's what they think should have happened. But actually, real people aren't as nasty and parochial and snobby as you Guardian
writers.
Well,
it's like people, and by the way, I've had this happen a number of times to me where people talk about, where somebody says something about Greece, and I'll say, oh God, I've been in Greece recently. I was on a cruise, obviously, before the pandemic. And, you know, and then these people, and I'm just thinking of a couple of people, Phelan, that you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. And the people will come in, oh, they've ruined Santorini. Oh, they've ruined, you know, Lesbos. Oh, they've ruined Mykonos or whatever, right? The cruise ships. And I'm like, it's really funny, you see, and it's exactly the point Phelan's kind of making. Maybe this is an added point to this is, it's okay for those people to have gone to Greece, right? So they've been in Greece. They were holidaying in Greece, but they have a problem with the cruise ship. Now, the cruise ship allows people with more modest income, for example, to go and see the Greek islands. And my God, it's magnificent. And I have my biggest take out of doing that Greek islands thing on the cruise ship with the Media Research Centre. Thank God. Thanks be to God. I loved it. I remember stopping one time at a little island, and it was like a very small little island. And so the whole purpose of the island was, and it was actually really small, a little small village. And we stopped there, and the people in the shops and the little places for coffee and everything, they couldn't have been happier to see us coming. If that cruise ship doesn't stop at that little remote island,
that island's over.
There's no young people going. You can't keep people there. What are you going to do? What's going to happen there? You know, your indigenous sustainable farming. Good luck with that.
On a Greek island.
No, or one guy is going to buy it. You know,
I think Mark Stein said it. Mark Stein said it. Well, you know, there's a lot of Greek islands, and there's not that many billionaires. But Mark Stein said it. You know, decline is actually quite attractive from a tourist point of view. You know, the kind of faded glory and, you know, even Europe, the Parisian streets, you know, they're not knocking down buildings and building skyscrapers. It's all old buildings and old coffee houses and old people and old music and all that. But don't forget its decline. It means there's no young people. It means there's no new industries. There's nothing vibrant. You're watching, you know, you're watching something from the past, and that's quite attractive as you sip your coffee, and you know that you're going back to your
developed place, your nice things. Yeah.
But you know, eventually that will destroy. There will be no purpose for that island to exist, and it'll become a dead island, and maybe an empty island. Mm-hmm. But if you have 3,000 people arriving once a day or twice a day.
Oh, sure,
You've got the most, and you have all these young entrepreneurs thinking,
I can do this. Coffee on the
burritos,
shore.
Coffee, dancing, you know, whatever it is, book clubs, bookshops. You know, you'd be surprised, knick-knack shops.
But also things like, you know, these kind of like embroidery, you know, people making, you know, indigenous industries and, you know, doing crochet or whatever it is that's indigenous to the area. And bringing back, actually, industries that probably would have, you know, been hammered prior to that.
So COVID, yes.
COVID.
The virus that keeps on giving. I mean, I want to tell the people about the Irish situation. The Irish have had the worst lockdown, the biggest and the worst lockdown of any country in Europe, possibly the world, where you couldn't leave your house. You weren't allowed to go more than 3 kilometres. You weren't allowed to have visitors in your house. And now they've got this thing where they're starting to open up the country, but not on a science basis, on a kind of what's important basis. And of course, what's important to the elites is what they like and what they think is important, and screw the rest of us. So on Sunday there was a hurling match. Now, hurling is not related to curling, just to let you know.
I'm fascinated by curling. Here's what curling looks like, by the way. Of course, Americans know what curling looks like.
Well, some of them do. But let's have a look at curling.
In the forefoot, Rachel Holman trying to score two. Swoopers had to work this one really hard. Just do enough.
And then let's have a look at hurling.
Imagine a job. Imagine a sport, by the way, where being able to sweep is actually an advantage. I would encourage children, by the way, to do curling. You know, it's a good start at the house. You know, you could always say to the child then, listen, I'm only getting them to practice.
That's right.
Yeah, when the neighbours would be saying, is that child abuse? You'd be saying, no, sure, I'm hoping he's going to be on the curling, Olympic curling team.
Yes.
Off you go, Phelan. Tell us about and hurling.
Let's have a look at hurling. So it's an Irish sport.
Can I just interject and say it's an incredibly technically brilliant sport. And you'll notice how little protective equipment these people are wearing, and that they're running at a mad rate, and they're able to balance the ball at the end of that stick. I mean, it's kind of an amazing thing. Off you go, Phil.
I overrated Gim, if you ask me. But
Cú Chulainn played it, by the way. Yes. He was a mythical character. We won't get into it today.
Hound of Ulster.
There you go.
I met a few of those in the nightclubs. So basically, the All-Ireland hurling final was on Sunday, and the government said, oh, that's important. We can allow 40,000 people to go there. But you're not allowed in Ireland to have a drink in a pub. You're not allowed to go to a nightclub. Weddings, you're not allowed to dance at weddings.
You can't dance at weddings
but
in Ireland.
But so it's basically what they're saying is, and the festivals are closed. What they're saying is in Ireland, it's kind of a moral thing. Well, this is the hurling final is kind of Irish and traditional and chaste and lovely, even though everyone gets pissed at it, drunk, that is not angry. And So they're saying this is a good thing, but those them that rock and roll in them nightclubs now, that would just be like, that would be the devil's music. That's the only explanation.
Like that movie. What was that movie called? Not Flashdance, but something like that. The one set in, what's that one called, Magda? Footloose. That's it, Footloose. It's basically Footloose, you know?
Yes, or you can't beat City Hall there, you know, and then at the end, the old crotchety granny who opposed to this scene tapping her feet under the table because she so loves the music that these young people, that's what it is. It's saying, you know, the rock and roll festivals are evil and consuming alcohol. I mean, they are like, you know, they would laugh at the church dominated Republic of Ireland, and now they're just the moral police.
But it's the same here, Philip. It's exactly the same here. I mean, let's look at this footage here of Nancy Pelosi this past weekend, and this is hilarious. This footage was taken by a guy from the New York Times, actually, Kenneth Vogel, and he tweeted out, "Look at Nancy Pelosi scheduled in Napa this weekend for an event benefiting vulnerable House Democrats. Donation, not vulnerable people, by the way, just vulnerable House Democrats. $100 a ticket, up to $29,000 to chair the thing, right? So basically, look at this crowd. By the way, I'm fascinated, and I wonder what they were eating. But a number of people, including, by the way, fabulous Glenn Greenwald, also pointed out, by the way, the almost entirely old, white, rich crowd of DC donors goes maskless as they're served but by the servants. Look at the servants, though. The servants are all wearing masks, even though they're outdoors. But look at the lack of diversity.
So the servants can't, in fact, the rich donors, but the rich donors can infect the servants. Something if you believe like masks work, by the way.
Yeah.
So.
You know, but also, by the way, where's the social distancing going on among that crew, you know? And it's Napa. I mean, she really is. If ever there was a Marie Antoinette figure, and you'll always remember as well that this is the same Nancy Pelosi who got her hair done when the rest of us were looking.
We're banned from
doing it. But, you know, but we were very resourceful, let us just say. And we're very grateful for the underground hairdressers that saved the country during the lockdown. But the other fantastic example of hypocrisy was this past weekend in New York. And this was an epic failure on so many levels, it's not even a funny film. So basically they decided, you know, de Blasio decided in his infinite idiocy, by the way, can I just say, is that a good thing? In his infinite idiocy, he decided to have a homecoming kind of celebration, right, in Central Park. And the idea was, we're all getting back to normal now because COVID's gone. But I love the way the New York Times did this so well, right? Their headline is just so great. This is underneath the headline, I should say. An all-star show to celebrate the city's emergence after the hardships of the pandemic, even as the spread of the Delta variant has driven up cases again, was stopped halfway through. Now, they had to stop it halfway through because of a storm.
Yes.
But there's two things, there's a couple of things here, but I also think it's incredible that they decided to go ahead, even though, and by the way, we know this because we were following all these storms. This storm was well publicized, right? Yeah. But no, they're going to go ahead with this thing. They're going to go ahead with it anyway. And they're going to go ahead with it, even though this is the same, like the New York Times, which every day talks about
The Delta variant. And it's like, so, you know, it should be an all-star show to celebrate the city's emergence after the hardship of the pandemic. Went ahead despite the spread of the it's not even as it's despite in the face of against medical advice against you know because the rest of us are told we have to wear masks inside, we have to social distance, we can't do this, we can't do that, but no, when de Blasio decides
that he wants to party and to bring all the great and the good. And we had another bit of funny thing about what happened that night as well. But I just wanted to, like, on the detailed front, like, so that everyone was meant to be performing, all kinds of people, including Bruce Springsteen, who didn't get to perform because at 7:30, as Barry Manilow was singing, "I Can't Smile Without You," they basically said everyone has to leave. And by the way, just for those,
I thought Barry Manilow couldn't smile because of all the plastic surgery.
Well, by the way, just look at this footage here of Barry Manilow. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary.
Attention. Due to approaching severe weather, all persons should move quickly and calmly to the nearest exit and proceed to your vehicles and protected areas outside of the event site.
But by the way, can I just say also, he's looking pretty good and he's got plenty of energy in his body. Look at the kind of nimble way he's moving around the place there. The guy is just only 78 years old. And when I think, when we were growing up, there's a thing I should say about America that I think is also worth pointing out. It's very specifically American. America is a very... what's the word for it? It's the opposite of ageist. What does that mean? What's the opposite of ageist?
I don't think anyone's invented that word.
So the opposite of ageist is America. America is the exact definition of the opposite of ageist. Because no one ever mentions that. People don't go and say, oh, and he's only 78. In Ireland, if you say the word 78, you immediately picture somebody sitting by a fire, kind of warming themselves and with a, you know, kind of a Zimmer frame somewhere in the background. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the thing that I think is the classic thing about this horrific mistake of a concert is this particular footage, which we're going to show you right now, of Schumer, of you know, the House, what is it called? The House Majority Leader, is that what they call him, Phelan?
Chuck Schumer has been slammed on social media for dancing backstage at the We Love NYC, the homecoming concert in Central Park on Saturday.
As he is dancing with Stephen Colbert, and this, by the way...
Schumer's a senator, isn't he?
The senator, but he's the Senate Majority Leader, excuse me. He's the Senate Majority Leader. Look at him dancing now with Stephen Colbert. A couple of things that need to be mentioned to this. I think the most obvious thing, the first thing to mention about this, is that 10,000 Americans are stranded in Afghanistan. And Chuck Schumer is dancing with Stephen Colbert backstage at a concert that shouldn't have happened in the first place, because according to the Democrats, we're all about to die from the Delta variant. Mm-hmm. Like, what's true anymore? Like, what, you know? And by the way, the other thing that I thought, I didn't tell you this earlier, and I just think you will, I just want to watch your reaction to this film, because I think this is hysterical. This footage, by the way, was taken by, who do you think took the footage, film?
Some roadie.
Some 14-year-old girl, right? Uh-huh. No, this was taken by somebody called Bill Neidhart, who is the press secretary for Bill de Blasio. Now, that tells you an enormous amount of information. And by the way, the caption he put on this when he put it up on Twitter was backstage antics. Are they? So this is everything you need to know. These people are 12. These are juveniles. These are worse than juveniles. A lot of juveniles, by the way, are very responsible.
No, but also juveniles are very aware of embarrassment as well.
Yes. And of social justice, by the way.
And Colbert is not wearing a mask either.
Colbert's not wearing a mask. You talk about tone deaf. By the way, I mean, the rest of us, I mean, I'm honestly, the world is so divided, by the way, at the moment. The rest of us, and everywhere I've been going this last while, and you, the same thing, Phelan, everywhere we've been over this last weekend, you know, meeting friends and talking to people, everyone, and everyone you phone, by the way, everyone talks about Afghanistan. Everyone is, like, beside themselves looking at pictures of, you know, and I'm not a mother, right? But I do know Eric, right? And I know babies that are important to me. The idea of a mother being so desperate, desperately scared about the future of her baby, that she would hand her baby over barbed wire to total strangers rather than keep that baby with herself, because she has absolutely no confidence in her ability to keep him safe. It's just like, so the rest of us are obsessed with this, right?
That baby, just to fill you, maybe you didn't see, the baby was ill and he got medical treatment and he's been handed back to the family now.
Oh, God. But there's other children, Phil. Yeah. They're handing children over there. They are handing children over. And a little child, I read a woman's report yesterday where she had her little two-year-old. She brought the whole family to the airport and the two-year-old got trampled to death at the airport. I mean, sorry, the rest of us are obsessed with this. And Chuck Schumer is dancing. And by the way, I would have thought politicians, more than the rest of us, would be more conscious. Yeah.
Is he not supposed to be in a situation room somewhere, situating things?
No, but I mean, is he not?
Yes, exactly.
But I mean, I actually think this is like so not a joke at all.
No, I mean dancing. I mean, he's supposed to be somewhere talking, you know, trying to phone Boris Johnson's number three, saying, let's coordinate
what can we
this.
Do? Yeah. I heard about this one family. The man is from New Jersey. Like, are they not on the phones all the time trying to...
No, they're dancing with their fellow elites.
What was the thing, Phil? Who was it? Nero. What did Nero do?
He fiddled while Rome burned. Probably, but apparently he was a good fiddler. Chuck Schumer's a really bad dancer.
No. I mean, this is so not a joke, Phil. I'm sorry. I'm not going with you on that one, because I just think this is so not a joke. These are the people... This is Chuck Schumer, Senate Majority Leader. This is what he thinks is appropriate to do while the rest of the world, while ordinary people all over America, all over the world, by the way, the British as well, all of the Allied forces, are on their knees praying. People who don't pray are praying. that these people will be delivered from harm's way, and also to remember the people who will not be delivered and who are going to end up in that prison formed by the Taliban that is going to be Afghanistan. Very, very frightening. It's really horrible. But that's the dancing Democrats for you, you know. Mm. And by the way, another little throwaway from this story that I think was worth mentioning, and it really does annoy the hell out of me. You know, they were talking about how wet it was, and all of the mainstream media, this is when I'm talking about the concert in New York, and they called it off, told everyone to go home. You know, they said basically, and I said every last new mainstream media outlet has this story repeated, like almost like it's like every last one of them have the exact same words, because I tried to find out where I got this. Every one of them has the same sentence, and it is that Saturday night, Hurricane whatever, the Storm Henry, dumped the most rain on Central Park in a single hour in recorded history. In recorded history. This is something I would warn everyone out there, when people at your Thanksgiving table start throwing this recorded history at you, you need to remember that recorded history, when it comes to the weather, is at the very, very most about started in 1850. Oh, and that's being really generous.
You've been very generous
because they invented the thermometer.
In America, maybe. You know, and you were relying on individuals who weren't getting paid, were voluntary.
So they invented the thermometer then. So basically, you know, not 200 years ago, right? Basically, you know, is that 200 years ago? Whatever that is. That's 1952.
I would say the reliable weather information started about 1900. I would say 1950.
So basically, when they say recorded history, you know, and they often leave out the word recorded, they say the wettest thing in history. Always pick them up on that. This weather recording has been going on for a minute.
Yeah.
People have been around for about 300,000 years. Humans have been around for a very long time. This shocking statistics that they throw at you from a hot minute ago, it's ludicrous. It's a complete nothing burger. And by the way, anyway, moving on, we've got to move on from
I mean, we talked about Afghans. I mean, I just love this line from the LA Times, you know.
About the refugees.
And they were saying about, you know, how we ended up where we were, you know. And there's this anti-refugee situation, you know. After 9/11, you know, back home, public concern grew when immigrants, not refugees, were involved in a handful of other deadly terror attacks. You know, and I'm going, do you remember the Boston bombing? That was a family who got asylum in America because they were political refugees. And, you know, not only that, they got the asylum and then they immediately flew home for a vacation from the country that they were. So stop lying, tell the truth, and maybe people might be more open to refugees. But if you're going to, and you know, if you're going to pretend that there were no attacks on American soil by people who were let in as refugees, then people are not going to trust you no matter what you say.
And can I just say that Chuck Schumer, instead of dancing at a concert in New York, maybe could have spent a bit of time doing some background checks on people who want to get into this country, right?
Yeah.
Couldn't he have done that?
Yeah.
And by the way, what were the four thoughts? We still would love to know, by the way, and any of you who have that information, just get in touch with us because we'd love to know. What were the 4,000 people who worked at the American Embassy in Kabul doing for the last few months when this was obviously about to happen? What were they not busy trying
It was Pride Month, Anne.
Well, it was Pride Month, of course.
It was Pride Month in June.
Yeah.
So my old friend Josh Fox, who is the line director of Gasland, has now taken up climate as a after lying about fracking, now he's going to lie about the climate. But ultimately, a lot of this environmentalism, you know, they don't like people getting cheap flights. They don't like mass tourism. And, you know, they don't like shopping either. And they don't like Florida. So, so Josh Fox, I've been to the, this is a tweet he sent out. I've been to the wreckage of hurricanes, wildfires, oil spills, fracking, you name it. But the worst ecological disaster is just any old strip mall parking lot in Florida.
What a horrible
hashtag America, hashtag
guy.
Sprawl, hashtag ugliness. I mean,
what a horrible guy. And can I just say, I just love strip malls.
Yes.
I love the fact that you can park your car real easy. And then all very unstressful. And you find all the stuff, all the things that you needed to do in the one spot. Brilliant. Just brilliant.
Yeah, well, you know, Josh Fox, obviously if he doesn't like something, you know, there must be some value in it. This is the guy who lied, who said fracking caused breast cancer. The American Cancer Society and doctor said you're not telling the truth. He's never withdrawn that claim. He's happy to fright
never
people. And by the way, just to let everyone know, Josh Fox was arrested in the Capitol for being there illegally. He got out that evening and wasn't even given a ticket. and made a big thing about it on the TV and got hundreds of hours of publicity for being the brave truth teller going to the Capitol without permission and getting arrested. Then when you were arrested in the Capitol...
He would be, of course, called what they call a protester as opposed to a rioter.
Yes.
You know, this language is very interesting. You know, when language gets so degraded as it has been through this last, particularly through the pandemic, completely degraded language, you know... Protester, rioter, you know. So BLM
insurrection.
Yeah.
This is calm yourself. And they wonder why people are skeptical about vaccines, and they wonder why people are skeptical about scientists and experts. It's because you've been lying to us through your teeth. All those public health experts who said BLM protests were not a super spreading event. In fact, we're good for public health. You were lying for political reasons, as you're entitled to do. But don't
racism was an epidemic failure.
Don't expect us to treat everything else you say seriously after that. Talking about honesty, I love this fraud. Landmark study about honesty is canned after a decade because
they told a lie.
It was dishonest.
I love it. So where was the study happening?
The guy's a big guy, Dan Irely of Duke University. Let's put a picture of him up there. He's basically made a fortune on this...
On dishonesty.
On dishonesty, but whilst being dishonest. And he's sort of this one of these things. And it's kind of this liberal thing about people. Liberals believe that people are fundamentally good. But it's funny, they've got this weird thing. They believe they're fundamentally good, but the rest of the people are fundamentally flawed. Whereas conservatives believe everyone's fundamentally flawed.
Yes.
It's a difference.
Original sin.
And he came up with this study that showed that if people sign the honesty declaration, and I think you know this, I sign this under pain of perjury. If they sign it before they fill in the form, they'll be honest, more honest than if they sign it at the end. Right? And they also, that if you get people to read... if you get people to read the Ten Commandments before they fill in a form, they will be more honest. And all these things. And it turns out he faked the data.
I love it.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the guy made a fortune. The guy made his life out of this, you know. And there's his New York Times bestselling book, you know.
The honest
and
truth
he's been on
dishonesty.
NPR, everything. But also, another thing was, this is not the first time this guy has been shown to be using dodgy stats and making stuff up. And... look, and this is the byball liberals get, is when they lie, their lies are isolated. You know, their lies are, they're kept, he was wrong with that, he messed up.
But he's right about everything else.
But he's right about everything else, as long as it fits in with our worldview. Whereas conservatives get caught doing something wrong, then all their canon, their work, like Roseanne Barr, you can't see any of the Roseanne shows now. Because of one tweet that she sent out at 3 a.m., her whole life's work has been taken off.
It's horrible.
So Dan Irely, it's a great story. And, you know, and then his co-author, Max Bezerman, who is a professor at business administration at the Harvard Business School, said he had raised concerns about inconsistent data during the original study. But Irely allegedly assured him and everyone else working on the study that the findings were correct. And it's like, I don't buy that, Max. You are now a professor of business administration at Harvard Business School because of this study. And you didn't ask too much questions because you didn't want the answer. That would be my opinion.
Dear. Okay.
Well, I want to hear
I really
this,
want to hear this.
A leading concern. What do you hear this? This is a brilliant analysis of the Me Too movement. And you haven't really read it. Put this in. So, you know, and this guy, unfortunately, it looks like he's going to be cancelled. But there will be another time to talk about the truth and ethics of the situation involving me. But let me say now that when government politicizes allegations and headlines condemn without facts, you undermine the justice system. And that doesn't serve women, and it doesn't serve men, or it doesn't serve society.
And you're quoting from someone, leading conservative.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, everyone has a right to come forward. And I applaud their bravery and courage in doing so. But allegations should still be scrutinized and verified, whether made by a woman or a man. That is our basic justice system.
Fair enough.
I understand that there are moments of intense political pressure and media frenzy that cause a rush to judgment. But that is not right. It is not fair or sustainable. Facts still matter. A firecracker can start a stampede, but at one point everyone looks around and says, why are we running?
I can't wait to hear who this is.
The truth is ultimately always revealed.
Who is this?
And this person, everyone say, you know, the recent furore about him, it was a political media stampede, but the truth will out in time, of that I am confident.
Okay, who is this?
Andrew Cuomo.
You said a leading conservative.
I was
You're good. Naughty.
That could have been written by a conservative. That could have been written by a conservative.
Very naughty.
But it's true, actually. There's nothing there.
Is it true, Phelim, that Andrew Cuomo left his dog behind when he was moving out?
Let's get to the most important. Yes, it looks like, because Captain the dog, strange name, but anyway, Captain the dog is a rescue dog, and we have opinions about rescue dogs that maybe are unpopular, as in, always be careful with both rescue dogs. Was biting people and nipping people. So he's been shopping Captain around the office, trying to get somebody to look after him.
And talking about dogs, really awful, awful COVID dog story from Australia, which I'm sure some of you have heard about. Rescue dogs ready for adoption, shot dead by council due to COVID restrictions. This is from The Sun actually, The Sun in the UK, The Sun in the US, actually. Rescue dogs ready for adoption were shot dead by a heartless council due to COVID restrictions. The pooches, including one which had just given birth, were killed to stop people travelling to pick them up and catching the virus. Can you believe that?
This is Australia. Australia has these massive lockdowns now where you're not allowed to leave your house, you're not allowed to go anywhere. People are getting arrested. There's people even on the run because they were spotted out and about. You know,
Berkshire Council in New South Wales, Australia, told a local watchdog it was to protect its employees and community from the risk of COVID transmission. But the alarming lengths have sparked outrage among animal activists, prompting a government probe, the Sydney Morning Herald reports. We're deeply distressed and completely appalled by this callous dog shooting. They shot these dogs. I mean, completely mad. Awful stuff. There's awful stuff going on in the world. And Australia, God help us. And we just, big shout out to all of our fans in Australia who we just adore. Yeah. Just terrible. I mean, the scenes from Australia that I've been looking at over the weekend and all of this stuff, you can get all of this stuff on Twitter, because the new, you know, what you know, amazing about the pandemic, that one of the biggest things that have been sacrificed is, or maybe, no, the biggest, probably one of the biggest exposures of the pandemic is how really awful the media are.
Yeah.
So they're only into panic porn and telling you you're about to die. And they're not into telling you about the complete lack of liberty, the complete a destruction of civil liberties that's happening in Australia. I mean, there are scenes there that are unbelievable. We saw a scene of a guy, like, they had a news story about a guy who has COVID and he left his apartment or whatever, you know, but he's probably fairly asymptomatic, but they're showing like where he went in this car. They're like, it's unbelievable. They put his name out, they put his photograph out on a news show.
Mm-hmm.
It's just horrific what's going on over there. God help the people. We've had some of our own drama here with animals, haven't
yes,
we, Phelim?
Yes, a first for Scaredy Cat.
Oh, God.
The angelic monster and the consequence of kindness.
So, Phelim, you've got some videos there. That
yes, let's
taken.
Show the video of Scaredy presenting his first live animal kill. His first animal kill ever, I think.
Very, very
He's
shocking.
Wounded a few butterflies.
So I was sitting in the back at the house, and the next thing, you know, I always hear when Scaredy Cat comes, he jumps over the back fence when he's coming back from his travels.
Yes.
And he comes back and I see something in his mouth, and then I'm like, oh my God, that's a mouse. Then I wondered, by the way, was it a toy mouse? Because one of the neighbours plays with him and she has toys for him, and I thought maybe it's a toy.
Well, so and then he got past me into the house, and I immediately say, Scaredy, drop that. And Scaredy, well, I sort of mess with him a little, and Scaredy drops it. Next thing, the mouse takes off, jumps Aww. Up on the on the counter, runs in behind the microwave. I pull back the microwave, smash a glass. He runs in back out towards Anne screams. And then I finally get him in the right direction and he's heading out. And just as he comes out, he sees Anne, he runs back, jumps down and goes under our oven.
Basically my fault.
He's under the stove.
I think the summary is...
No, actually, to be fair, I should have closed off that particular alleyway to him.
But basically, I think the point we want to make now is we are not 100%. Magda's hearing this for the first time, but we are not 100% sure that the mouse is out of the house.
I'm 100% sure he's still in the house. In fact, here's the video from last night. I put the camera up. Here's the video from last night, him coming out for a little midnight stroll and then thinking the better of it. Because I left Scaredy Cat in the room with him, but obviously... So
So if anyone out there has advice of how we can for sure make sure that this mouse, he's a little small little mouse, comes out and gets back into the wilds, we would really appreciate it.
Will you accept advice on how to dispatch the mouse by more immediate methods?
I'd prefer if the mouse would walk away unscathed by this extraordinary adventure he's been on, and maybe learn a thing or two about the wilds and people's houses and stuff like that.
Yes.
Anyway, this brings me, funny enough, talking about cats, cheese, brings me to the recipe.
Mice.
Very, very good segue there. So this is a great recipe, great, super simple recipe from the French, of course, and from Jacques Pepin, who probably many of you know and follow his recipes. He's obviously everywhere. And it's called Fromage Fort, which is strong cheese, which I don't know why they call it that. But this is what you do when maybe you've had a party or you've had people over and you had maybe did a cheese board and you've lots and lots of little bits of cheese left. And you think, what am I going to do with all these little bits of cheese? I never, ever throw cheese out, by the way, because I always think you can grate it into something. Don't ever, please don't throw cheese out. So what you do with all the bits you have, and by the way, I think I've said this on the podcast before and I'll say it again. If you have, when you've finished eating your parmesan, very, very expensive parmesan, always, always keep the hard rind and throw that in to a pot when you're making stock or when you're making soup. Really, really good for flavour. Always do that. Anyway, never, ever throw them out. But look at here now. Look at the little collection I have here. And in among the collection, you'll notice, and the reason I say this is it becomes relevant later, is I have this blueberry goat's cheese that I've had for a while. I just love it. It's gone a bit hard, but it's so delicious. God, yum, really yummy. But anyway, I've all these bits and pieces. See what I'm doing there? Cut off all the hard rinds. Get rid of rinds. Cut off the bits. Even look at the little bit of blue on one there. My mother would always say, when you saw a little bit of blue on cheese, just cut away the little blue. That's what they make antibiotics about out of. That's what she used to say anyway. So keep it all. And basically what you're going to do with this cheese, you're going to throw it into your blender with about, I have a small amount of cheese there. I put a little bit more than a quarter cup of white wine in there with that. Two little cloves of garlic. Now, your man Pepin himself, Jacques Pepin himself, he suggests 3 to 4 cloves. I wouldn't like that much garlic in mine. And then a nice good shake of pepper. As well. And you could put some parsley in there. I forgot to put the parsley in. But basically, put that in and give it a whiz, whiz, whiz. Don't over whiz it, but it'll come into a really nice creamy mixture. And then what you can do is, you can see me taking it out now. There's a lot there, right? So I'm going to keep some of that. What you can also do is you can freeze it, by the way. Freeze it very nicely and have it for next party. But also you can just put that. One thing is to put it on crackers. You see me with some crackers there. But what I also think is a really nice idea is to put that on some sourdough. Toast your sourdough first, then put it under the broiler, and here it comes out of the broiler. Now, I think it was Phelan took his eye off the ball a minute there, and it's maybe more broiled than it should be, slightly more broiled than it should be.
Always the bitter words. Always the bitter words.
See it bubbling there along at the side. Really, really nice. And we had that as our kind of midday snack yesterday, and it was really, really nice. So that's my gift to you.
It's very nice.
Before we go, the last thing I want to say, which I thought this was such a funny thing. Look at this picture we're putting up here on the screen. If you're watching on YouTube, the UK police have painted the rainbow flag on their police cars as a way to fight hate crime. And as the UK, this is from Sky News, as UK political commentator Darren Grimes says, the police force is increasingly being taken as a clown force amid news that police cars will be painted with pride rainbows in an effort to fight hate crime. Put yourself in the position of a hardened criminal, a real menace and a thug. Imagine one of those rainbow so-called hate crime cars turning up with an officer that gets out wearing a rainbow polo shirt. He isn't exactly going to instill the fear of God
in you. Well, the police in the UK, they fight everything except crime.
So listen, we've come to the end of the show. We will, by next week, I think we're going to have some extraordinary news on the Hunter Biden movie to share with you. We're holding back for right now, but we have some really big news and we're very excited to share that with you. Thank you again for everyone who's donated. We're so grateful. We're very excited. And as we see with these horrible scenes going on in Afghanistan and the botched effort to get these good people out of there, we realise how important it is that the Biden family get exposed for all of their corruption and incompetence as quickly as possible.
So please go and give what you can at miceonhunter.com. Let's get this movie made. Let's get it out there. Let's get the truth out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.